listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 450.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoors Station. So, all the Christmas fuss is now over. And here we are at the end of the first proper working week of 2018, looking back at those photographs on our phones, wondering whatever possessed us to wear those jumpers and think that we looked cool. The recent report about plastics now found in the deepest part of our oceans is indeed troubling and quite rightly raises awareness about our environment once again, both on land and at sea. And what we, that is the outdoors people generally who listen to this podcast, need to really think about in more detail when it comes to our impact wherever we go. Links to that report and others can be found over on the show notes. Now, every footprint we leave behind has some kind of impact. Minor, you may think, but multiply that by hundreds or thousands of heavy boots or tire tracks, and all of a sudden, you have the start of a muddy trail, which turns into a new stream, and this leads to further soil erosion, and so on. Then we have the other impact and touchy subject of real fires in the open when out camping. Whether you're a hiker, backpacker, cyclist, bushcraft fan, paddler, or any other form of outdoors user, the basic fire is rewarding on many levels. However, the damage it can cause to the local environment, not to mention the unsightly mess of scarring, half-burned logs and usually empty bottles and beer cans, always seems to be someone else's mess to clear up. Now, as an aside, this is partly why I designed and invented the Honey Stove and Pocket Stove, both endorsed by Ray Mears and both simple, flat-pack, no-moving-part organic fuel stoves. They provide simple, lightweight cooking features and then social interaction, but with minimal impact. So I hear you say, why all the environmental talk on this podcast? The interview you're about to hear came via regular listener Colin Wolford, who in late 2017 attended one of the first Leave No Trace courses in the UK, run by lifetrekadventures.com. All the links to everything we discuss, as I say, will be found over on the show notes. Now, I know we have all heard the term Leave No Trace somewhere. But how deeply have you considered it within your own outdoor activities? As you'll hear, Seb Shingler and Heidi Schwenk are leading the way in the UK, bringing sensible, balanced education to the outdoor masses on this subject. Now, some of what we talk about may be really obvious to you. However, I'm sure we all know many groups, parties, forums, and so on, where this Leave No Trace awareness would enhance their enjoyment and help reduce thoughtless impact.
Well, and the concept of Leave No Trace really began during the 60s and the 70s. It was the United States. I think that's quite evident that people associate it with the USA quite frequently. It essentially came up following a large increase in the amount of visitors to the wild areas. This came from an introduction of, you know, recreational equipment, synthetic tents, gas, lightweight portable stoves. These sort of new technologies came off the back of developments from, you know, World War II and things like this. In those days, it was the United States Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, the National Park Service. They began these fairly rudimentary courses looking at how to have minimum impact on the land. And this culminated with a production named Leave No Trace Land Ethics, and that was 1987. It wasn't really until NOLS, the National Outdoor Leadership School, they came on board sort of early 90s and really ramped things up and turned into the Leave No Trace Center for Outdoor Ethics. That was kind of born from there and became the non-profit organization that it is today. It exists to educate people about their recreational impact on nature, as well as how to prevent and minimise the impacts through utilisation of seven key principles.
So what were people's activities before that period of time then in the rural community? Were they not making much impact on the national parks and so on?
Well, yeah, I think because there was just much, much less recreational use of the national parks, it wasn't really until the advent of this new lightweight equipment made things much more accessible, the sort of attitude towards things changed, and then there's just a huge increase in volume. And with that volume came, you know, the destruction of habitat, the sort of more and more paths, building of the fires, leaving behind of, you know, bits of waste products.
And obviously the impact on the environment grew from that. They must have been fairly in tune with the environment to be able to bring this to the fore so long ago. I didn't realise it was the 1970s, 1980s.
Yeah, absolutely. It has been going for some time there. And I guess it's had a lot of time to grow and develop in the US. And that's why, you know, it's so large over there. They have this intention of every, you know, leave no trace in every park. And it's really very much in the public eye. Which, you know, it's not over here at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think there's many people that have those words on the tip of their tongue, but perhaps they haven't actually gone into the depth of it, which I hope we're going to touch on in this conversation, actually. But before we get into it, you're obviously ambassadors for this campaign and trying to share it with opening people's eyes to the impact that they're potentially having on the environment. So just give me some background. Tell us how you got involved with it, both of you.
So we're both outdoor educators. For a number of years, we've been working in developmental context, teaching outdoor education. And it wasn't until we were working in Hong Kong that we became exposed to Leave No Trace and soon after became master educators. And after becoming master educators and using it with different groups, we learned how adaptable Leave No Trace is and how applicable it is to different environments and different groups. So about 12 months ago, moving back to the UK, we saw an opportunity to start our own thing here within the UK, Life Trek Adventures, which provides outdoor activities as well as Leave No Trace courses. And we feel that this is needed within the UK. And it fits in with a lot of what we're teaching in education and in outdoor education and also in the training structure for outdoor instructors. So that's how we came across it. I'd say at first we were unsure of it ourselves and a little bit skeptical about what it was. We'd heard the terms, like you say, leave no trace, but didn't really know that there was more to it, that there was both a science and an art to teaching leave no trace within outdoor education.
I suppose the key thing is to find an audience that's willing to listen, because potentially a lot of people can associate Leave No Trace with tree hugging and such activities. So how do you break down those barriers and get past that for people?
I think at the moment we've been focusing on, you know, the population such as the Scout Association, such as the Duke of Edinburgh, where people are regularly using outdoors, you know, the outdoors for recreational purposes. And, you know, we feel as though these guys should have sort of a vested interest there to learn about how to use, you know, the outdoors responsibility, how to minimise their impact whilst they're out there, and really how everybody can enjoy it, you know, together.
We haven't actually struggled too hard in finding the passionate people. There's a lot of passion when you get talking to people, and from the people we've met on our courses, it's great to be in a room with like-minded people. And it's not just about tree hugging. There's a common misconception there that you have to be a vegetarian or a vegan or change your lifestyle. That's not really what we're endorsing. We're endorsing responsible outdoor recreation, doing what you do in your local playground, in the outdoors place that you love.
And so when you've been doing these courses, presumably you've been doing it to a whole range of different ages, I'd just love to get your perspective on how the sort of different generations have reacted to what you've opened their eyes to, because I presume, I would assume, incorrectly perhaps, that the younger generation, the current sort of Duke of Edinburgh range of people, have got a completely different viewpoint to somebody in their sort of 40s, 50s that have been doing outdoor activities for a while.
Yeah, I think that's something that Leave No Trace is really special with, is encourage you to think about your audience and what will how you're going to address them, how you're going to inspire and teach them. So it's not just about here's the rules and this is what you have to do. We're not preaching. It's really about engaging in the audience and getting them to become advocates themselves. So we do a lot of experiential learning. A lot of our methods we use across age groups, and we have a lot of fun and giggles with six-year-old men as well as young children. And we talk about the hard points with Duke of Edinburgh. There's lots of difficulties in getting across why we do what we do. And I think one of the things that works really well for us is being honest and talking about times where we can't follow Leave No Trace practice or why it's important that we do it in certain environments as opposed to others.
Do you find with Duke of Edinburgh in particular that they're a harder sell than, you know, a different age group?
I think that stigma is attached to them, rightfully or wrongfully. With the right attitude, it's about capturing your audience. I think they're willing to hear it if you're able to address them. They've got a lot to think about on the Duke of Edinburgh, and it's about finding that space and time and making it interesting so that they'll learn something along the way.
I think that there's a variety of techniques that you're going to use to try and, you know, engage a D of E group. You know, you might choose to just sort of role model behaviours and not draw so much attention to them and actually wait for them to ask why you're doing something. You know, that's going to be one way, and it's going to be very different to when you're faced with a group, as you say, of older people who have spent a lot of time in the outdoors, and they've come to us specifically for Leave No Trace training. There, it can be much more direct. You know, it's less of a subtle engagement, and it's more of just an open debate there sometimes.
And what sort of number of people have you spoken to since you started doing this then?
So we've actually run how many courses is
it? We've
now
run six trainer courses. So we've delivered training to about 50 outdoor professionals and a number of about 20 awareness workshops.
And where have you sort of picked these people up, the outdoor professionals? Is that sort of through the Mountain Leadership Network, something like that?
It is, yes. So that's through the Mountain Training Association, and they have this, you know, idea of CPD, Continual Professional Development, where leaders are expected to amass a certain amount of points over a certain amount of time. And so when we came back to the UK, we thought that actually this would fit in very well. You know, people are going out and getting CPD, you know, relearning how to tie knots and things and relearn navigation. But this is something completely, completely different, completely new, a new language. It gives the professionals, the instructors, something to really bite into and run with when they meet, you know, their clients, and it can really sort of grow quite exponentially from them, really.
So in these few courses that you've done then, have you had any really responsive results, either as later stories from people you've spoken to or people actually on the course itself?
So the people who attend the courses, actually, even though they may well be binded with this the Mountain Leadership Qualification Framework, they actually have a huge variety of backgrounds. So we've had, you know, a lot of teachers, but then we've had medical professionals. We've had, like, lawyers, law professionals. We've had landowners owning woodlands. We've had a huge array of people. And they've taken it very much in their own direction. So some people have gone on to deliver their own awareness workshops to the scouts and guides. Some people have taken it onto their own Duke of Edinburgh, their own companies, for example, and they've incorporated it into their sort of policy and procedures, their company values. We've then had people who you know, like Colin, like who originally put us in touch, people who are just inspired by it and then speak to other people about it, and really they're the sort of the bread and butter that we think are really going to get the ball rolling with this language and this ethos.
So you're building this range of disciples across all levels?
Yes.
We prefer to, not quite disciples, but people who would like to promote responsible outdoor education.
Yeah, but it is the same, isn't it? You get into different groups via people that have been on your courses, and hopefully they spread, if not they share the education, but also spread the word in the value of learning this and perhaps taking it more to heart.
Absolutely. We hope the community grows and that this becomes something that we all know about.
Now, I know you both have got experience in the outdoors, but for people listening to this, perhaps you could both give us a little bit of a background to where you came from, as it were, before you got involved with this.
Yep. So Seb and I met at university studying outdoor adventure leadership and management. And from there, we took various jobs, freelancing jobs, travelled abroad quite a lot. I took a master's in outdoor education, and Seb followed his own thing, which I'm sure he'll tell you about, and ended up working in Outward Bound at Hong Kong for a few years there, where we were running expeditions sort of up to 18 days in length, sea kayaking and land-based expeditions. Podcasted World.
Award-winning producers of podcasts to inform, inspire, entertain, and encourage people to enjoy a healthy outdoors lifestyle.
Can I just interrupt you there? I've been to Hong Kong. It's not a very big island. How did you manage? How did you manage to do that?
You know what? This is such a misconception that Hong Kong is a small city on an island. Actually, yes, you're right. The actual Hong Kong Island itself is not very large. But as soon as you take that Star Ferry over to the Kowloon, the new territories, well, actually, 80% of the total landmass is completely undeveloped. So it's just mountainous, jungle everywhere. You've got a huge amount of islands just off the
300 islands.
Well, roughly, yeah. Actually, it's a fantastic place to be delivering outdoor education. It's a fantastic place to visit. And you know, if you're into sort of hill walking, trail running, surfing, sailing, you name it, it is a brilliant location for it.
So how did you guys end up there? Because it's a fairly unique experience, I would think.
Yes, it was actually one of our university lecturers put us onto Outward Bound Hong Kong. He had a prior connection there. And he felt that, you know, it would suit us quite well. And it was a really, really good move for us. It certainly had a large impact on our, you know, view of outdoor education. And, you know, bringing it back to the Leave No Trace there, it was a really excellent place to sort of get your teeth into the LNT, because you've got such a huge population and, as you say, a fairly small place. Some areas, some popular beaches were just, you know, they're suffering the impacts massively. And it was a real sort of hard hitter for us. And it wasn't really until we then left Outward Bound and we were traveling back across Asia into Europe, back to the UK, that we thought, you know, even in these sorts of highly populated places outside of Kowloon, even when you go into very, very remote, very sparsely populated, you know, we were in sort of outer Mongolia for a good month, and just the amount of sort of impacts that are being occurring there, you realise that actually these issues really are worldwide, they're global. And so we thought, upon our return to the UK, we need to start actually sort of, you know, bringing attention to this and providing some sort of, you know, an option for change at least, and an option for education.
Is there anybody else in the UK that you're aware of sort of doing something similar, or the sort of, you know, educating people in a similar way? Because it does sound, the more we talk about it, it sounds, actually, I can't think of anybody that does this.
No, I mean, there is. So Leave No Trace does have their sort of head center, if you like, is in Colorado in the States. But they have international centers in New Zealand, Australia, Ireland and Canada. So obviously our closest sort of centre, as you like, is Leave No Trace Island. You know, we've been in touch with them. We've spoken to them. But as far as on the UK side of things, actually, yeah, there's a few master educators, people who have had the same level of training as Heidi and myself. But as far as we're aware, there's nobody else sort of actively running trainer courses. And I think that's really what separates Heidi and myself, is that we have, you know, we're able to sort of deliver the 2-day, 16-hour syllabus rather than just the sort of few hours awareness workshop, which is more aimed, you know, at the sort of the end user as opposed to the instructors and the professionals.
All right. So come on, let's talk about practicalities then. Just perhaps you could give us some ideas of some of the key subjects that you might touch on during any of the courses that you run related to this subject. Well, I mean, the obvious one that I know we're going to talk about, because everybody sees it, and it is a common subject you see on many forums at the moment, is people having fires in rural locations. So, of course, we'll touch on that. But is there something else that you can bring to us that would explain and demonstrate the impact of this consideration?
Yeah, so the Leave No Trace offer 7 principles for responsible outdoor recreation. And those sort of break down, they're quite adaptable and they fit to a lot of environments across the world. So things such as plan ahead and prepare, travel and camp on durable ground, dispose of waste properly, leave what you find, and like you say, minimal campfire impact, respecting wildlife and farm animals, and being considerate of others. So on our courses, we use these 7 principles as a framework for the sort of workshops that we deliver. And all of those are delivered pretty experientially. If you can imagine, dispose of waste gets pretty fun. There's a lot of demonstrations and activities that surround that. And always with sort of a discussion or a review around those subject areas. A lot of these have what we call sort of grey areas, where it's hard to pinpoint the right answer because it's context-based. So we do encourage people to become judgment-informed, to be able to make their own decisions and sort of be their own expert. I think that's what people walk away with, that sense of responsibility to make up their own mind.
And of course, the touchy subject is the subject of fires, particularly wild camping. And if we're just narrowing it down to the UK, some of the impact that that makes in some of the most remote and beautiful places. I don't understand the need to have anything bigger than a small tin can type fire for any particular need. But what are some of the excuses that you may have come across in your time of doing this, where people try and justify, you know, a campfire which involves cutting down green trees, obviously, green wood, the smoke that it creates, and also the scar features?
Yeah, I think it's broken into a few areas. It's either falls under cooking and drinking, you know, either cleaning water by boiling or just food preparation. It comes down to people embracing the sort of social aspect and saying that a campfire brings everyone together. It's something to sit around, which, of course, it does. We're not denying that at all. And then, you know, occasionally it's sort of you get the, oh, it'll keep away the wild animals and things, which, you know, is sort of maybe fair enough if you're in North America, but I don't think that's a particularly valid reason anywhere in the UK. But we sort of agree, actually, that, you know, we would argue that 9 times out of 10, it is absolutely better to have a gas stove that can, you know, boil your food, boil your boil in the bag, or cook boil your tea much quicker than actually gathering a campfire, you know, and tending it and having that impact afterwards. You know, on the subject of campfires, really, if you absolutely must have a campfire, I think that a mound fire is the absolute way forward.
Now, I just interrupt you there. I've heard of this term before, but can you describe what a mound fire actually consists of, the principle of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, you're just insulating your fire from the ground. So a quick run through of how it's done. You need some sort of layer on the ground. It can be a bin bag. It could be a survival bag. It has even been done on the top of a Gore-Tex jacket. And this, you lay it down first, and that's going to help you clean up later. And then on top of that, you'll place a good sort of 6 to 8 inches of soil, compacted down quite solidly into a mound. It needs to be quite sort of sturdy and compact. That mound, you know, it can be ideally just as big as you'll need it. That mound has a flat top, and that acts as your sort of surface to build your fire upon. And really, that mound then also acts to, you know, minimize the fire. It stops the logs that you're putting on getting bigger and bigger. It maintains all the little bits that drop off the sides of the mound. You know, you'll notice them, you'll pick them up, you'll put them all back in there. You'll just be burning small bits that will burn down to a fine ash. Once everything has burned down to a fine ash, then it can be just the case of, you know, mixing that mound up together and then just returning the soil back to its original place. And you've made absolutely zero impact on the, you know, underneath the fire at all.
Right, I see. So really the principle's several fold, isn't it? Actually going through the exercise makes you create a smaller base and therefore a smaller fire. And because of the nature of the shape of the mound and the fire itself, you're more attentive. And as you say, not making it bigger and bigger and bigger for the sake of doing so.
You know, we think, you know, when you find these sort of half burnt out fires, it just then encourages people to build a fire and sort of finish off that log, you know, and burn right the way through it. And it's completely unnecessary. And it just adds to, you know, further the negative impact.
So do you touch on other things? Like, for example, as you say, you talk about other cooking stoves like gas stoves or whatever. But I suppose we have to take into account and consider that from a waste point of view, obviously a lot of, if you go down the sort of pre-packed foods, that's a lot of plastics or bags to get rid of. There's food or whatever you take with you in whatever format that consists of. It could be tins and that sort of thing. Do you suggest people sort of unpack the food before they set out and repack it into a way which involves minimal packaging?
Absolutely. And even before that, you know, when you're actually in the sort of shop buying your food, is looking for things that, you know, contain less packaging and can be split and divided and stored and kept.
I think it all comes down to planning ahead. And what you can repackage, and what you can't, maybe think about what are the items that are going to be, you're going to be able to carry out with you. Are they going to be smelly? Are they going to be heavy? What's the impact of that?
Would you suggest then disposing of those, the waste from that, in the normal way, or do you take it a stage further when you're back at home to actually consider disposing of the waste, whether it's metal or plastics or whatever, in a different way?
We certainly encourage people to transfer what they've learned outside and their responsible actions outside into their home life. That's a great thing to do. And I think just helps really bring that message back into home. And often we leave the outdoors as a wild place, but really we're hoping to extend our home into the outdoors. It's not about living separate to it, but sort of building a relationship with the environment that we live in.
Yeah, funny enough, I was just watching before we were having this chat, I was just watching a couple of clips on YouTube. Somebody who at Christmas time had been up Snowdon and in that area for a couple of days walking, and also somebody down in the Brecon Beacons. And both the videos showed the car parking area, the places where people gather, is completely dense of cars. And even in the background of the videos, you could see all the bins were all overflowing from various bits of leftover items, I presume, when people come down from the hill, even just for an afternoon's walk. So it's an ongoing thing, isn't it? The waste has to go somewhere. But I suppose if you can think about everything in advance, you reduce the impact that you're making.
Definitely. And if you really are keen on planning ahead, you can even avoid some of those more touristy areas, go to some of the less populated areas in order to sort of disperse that impact rather than putting it all in one spot. Or you could think about how many cars you're taking to the destination, or car sharing, things like that.
Yeah, I suppose it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, some of the things you're talking about are very, very simple. Extremely simple, I suppose, but it's a case of making people aware of the impact of lots of simple things, isn't it? Because if we all carry a feather and leave it in one place, it'll soon be a mountain.
One of our participants said that his pet hate was people in car parks, like you were mentioning, who use too much space to park. They haven't been considerate and parked close enough to the next car. So it means that somebody else's day is ruined because they can't quite fit into the space.
Consideration.
All these tiny little things. Absolutely. Consideration to other users as well.
So talking about the feedback then, where do you think this is going? Where are you taking this? Are you keeping sort of to a rigid sort of education process, or are you sort of being a bit flexible? Are you getting some interest from different areas, that type of thing?
We're certainly flexible to grow. We're interested in developing it from an educational side as well as a training side for instructors. There are a lot of ways that it can fit into both the training syllabus and qualifications that are equally judgment-based, as well as areas of citizenship and just taking care for what is ours. So we hope to expand it this year. We're hoping to run more courses across the UK, and to encourage that community, we're hoping to put on a few events.
I think sort of publicity is the main thing, really, because, you know, when we're talking about people going out into the wild areas and, you know, the mountainous areas and things, it's still a minority of people, and Leave No Trace is just as valid for the people who, you know, take the dog, a walk in the nature reserve just down the road, and they're going to find just as much litter there as we are on the side of Snowdon. So not only are we, you know, looking for those outdoor enthusiasts who spend, you know, weekends on the mountainside, it's also perfectly valid for those people who just enjoy an afternoon's walk on the beach or in the forest or in the farmland, you name it. It can be applied there. It can be something that people can have in their mind.
Excellent. So if I was to ask you what piece of equipment that you found to be the most helpful to live this philosophy in the outdoors, what would you say to that?
Heidi, do you want to take this on? I think we both have the same thing in mind.
Trying to think through what's the most important thing.
I think
besides from your usual outdoor kit, is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, just anything. It just came to me as you were talking then. I was thinking then, you know, there must be ways of having sort of gear shortcuts, or, you know, shortcuts in such a way that it enables you to enjoy the outdoors, but you make a much less of an environmental footprint than before.
Trowel.
Oh, there we go. Definitely, I think the trowel, probably it's got to be the sort of signature piece of kit, and it's exceptionally useful, especially when it comes to dealing with human waste, you know, which can be a huge issue in certain areas.
I don't think it's unheard of to take a trowel, but it certainly is useful, and I think it's underrated, packing a trowel.
Have you found people's comments on actually going in the woods, as it were? Are people just find it the most disgusting thing, or are they considering it as being a sensible thing to do? Because I've met people on both ends of the scales that will just cross their legs for several days until they're almost puce in the face, and others which are quite open to the environmental freedom of such things.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's related to your comfort zone and how familiar you are in outdoor places. We've put in a lot of techniques with different groups that we've worked with, either teenagers who aren't bothered about it, or kids who are a bit embarrassed about it, or adults who aren't really taking notice of it. And generally, I think everyone can understand the reason behind it and appreciate why it's important. But it's about getting them comfortable to do that. So it does take a bit of preparation. It's worth sort of putting it in their minds before we go out. And if they're not comfortable with it, then maybe we shorten the trip. or we plan ahead and prepare and think about where the toilet's going to be.
Yeah. That's a good answer. I like that. Shorten the trip. Okay, guys. Well, it's just a half-hour walk. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Well, it's been great talking to you, and it's really interesting. And obviously, we will share this to as many people as possible, because I think there are a lot of people who could probably just benefit from just talking about it and kicking around ideas and hopefully becoming disciples in the future and sharing it to all sorts of generations, really. There is one other final question, though, and it's probably an awkward one because it's the subject matter, but I'd still like to ask it. It is, of all the things I could have asked you, what should I have asked you?
Having a think.
I think, you know, overview of L&T and who's it for, and the answer would be, you know, it's about getting the maximum amount of people outdoors. We're in no way discouraging people from using the outdoors. It's about enjoyment for everybody. But it's about enjoyment responsibly, and, you know, leaving it in a positive place for the next person.
Yeah, I think we love taking people on expeditions and taking them outside and using the outside as our playground. But we need to learn to become responsible for the playground that we work within.
And talking of that, actually, if people were to visit the website, which we'll obviously mention at the end of the show, and the links will be in the show notes, whereabouts do you run these courses? Whereabouts in the UK are you?
So we're actually based in Snowdonia National Park, we've run courses all over in Scotland, in England, in Wales. So actually the beauty of it is that, you know, it's very customizable, it's very adaptable, and really we can sort of run in any wild place, really. So, you know, national parks are our main sort of stomping ground.
Even the Malvern Hills.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure many of us outside the US had heard of Leave No Trace, I for one hadn't realised just how well-informed and well-developed the actual organisation is. Here's the Education Director to tell you more.
My name is Ben Lahan. I'm the Education Director for the Leave No Trace Centre for Outdoor Ethics, and one of the programs that I manage is our research efforts. Leave No Trace is based in two scientific disciplines, one being recreation ecology, which is really the study of recreation-related impacts and how they're caused, and also what the solutions are to those impacts as far as skills and techniques are concerned. The other piece of recreation ecology is really looking at the managerial implications of recreational impact in terms of how land managers can address those impacts through different management and education strategies. The second scientific field that Leave No Trace relies on is known as human dimensions of natural resources. And really what that involves is looking at the social science side of Leave No Trace, looking at people's behavior and their attitudes, looking at their values and their beliefs associated with spending time in the outdoors and the impacts that are created and resulting from that time they spend in the outdoors. And the intersection of the recreation ecology and the human dimensions work allows us to form strong educational and training programs that focus on Leave No Trace and make it as effective as possible in terms of helping people understand not only the consequences of their actions, but also how they can minimize any impact associated with whatever recreation they pursue. So currently we're focused on two specific studies. One of the studies is looking at use of and the effects of undesignated trails in parks and protected areas. Many land managers want to promote use of trails for hiking, biking, running, and so forth. But they also want to curb the use of undesignated trails, particularly when those trails go into sensitive habitats or environments, when they lead to erosion or cause other issues. And so our study was a multi-method experimental design study where we placed different treatments and controls on the landscape to see how visitors would react to those treatments and controls in a real-life situation to determine how we can effectively curb the use of these trails, but also at the same time provide sustainable trail opportunities for people to enjoy. Another study that the center is currently involved in is taking place in Rocky Mountain National Park, where we're exploring boulderers' attitudes, perceptions about Leave No Trace. Bouldering has exploded in the last couple of years, particularly as climbers go from a gym environment to the outdoors. And many of those gym climbers don't necessarily have the skills or the Leave No Trace techniques that they need to minimize their impacts of bouldering. And so this study has really been about determining how we can most effectively message to boulderers about minimizing their impacts associated with their chosen activity. Really what the goal is to provide sustainable bouldering opportunities for generations to come. And by understanding their perceptions and their attitudes, we can really tailor our educational efforts to be as effective as possible. So So the Leave No Trace Center engages in a variety of different types of scientific research. The primary purpose for us being involved in research is to ensure that our programs are as effective as they can be at helping visitors make good decisions about enjoying the outdoors responsibly.
Okay, so that's it this time. My thanks again to Seb and Heidi for taking part, and to Colin for bringing this subject to our attention. Now, if you know of or are involved with a group who you think could benefit from this knowledge, then please contact lifetrekadventures.com directly. I'm sure Seb and Heidi will be happy to chat further. Full contact details, a link to all the Leave No Trace videos, of which there are many, photographs and other links can all be found over on the show notes on theoutdoorstation.co.uk. So until next time, folks, take it easy out there and go lightly. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co.uk.